This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on treasury, liquidity and risk. Our topic today is entitled Leveraging FX Swaps and Repos for Enhanced Liquidity Management. Welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon and evening, wherever you may be. I can already see we have yet another record attendance today. So thanks, everyone, for attending this podcast today. As I say on previous podcasts, anyone in the audience can ask a question whenever you want. If you post it into the comment sections, you see on the right-hand side of your screen. I can take these as we go, or I can also answer them at the end. We've got 30 minutes to run. If you do ask a question, please let us know who you are, and if you possibly can, your role, and help us to answer that question in your context. One other thing for the audience today, a few have asked previously if they could be part of a podcast moving forward in the future. So if you'd like to join a podcast or have any ideas yourself, then you email Nick Appleby or Adam Pemberton. The emails are in the comments section just posted now, and we can make that happen for you. So today I am delighted to say I'm joined by our guest speaker, Brian Nolan, who is co-founder and CEO of Fintium. Brian, good afternoon to you. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Nev. I'm delighted to be on the podcast. You already introduced me as co-founder and CEO. My background, just as a way of introduction, I used to work in liquidity in the front office in Bank of Ireland 2008 to 2011, and then in UBS in liquidity governance 2011 to 2016. So that's kind of my background is liquidity and treasury.
Brilliant. Great. Now, as you may know, I normally ask a question to our guests around football at the start, but I happen to know you're a big Irish rugby fan. So one question I have for you, and I don't want to stack the odds for you here, but you've only got England and Scotland to go. So do you think it's going to be another Grand Slam? And we are recording.
The odds... say
that are in your favour.
It should be. you never know, especially like Scotland has a good team, but fingers crossed.
Yeah, indeed. Great. So on the subject today, we're going to continue with the theme around looking at how new FMIs or utilities are using new tech platforms to address specific issues in the world of liquidity, of which Fintium is one of them. Like always, Brian, good place to start is explaining what we need by, you know, an intraday trade or transaction versus what we all know is intraday settlement.
Yeah, the concept of intraday trades has been discussed for a long time. In the 90s, people talked about doing intraday money markets with each other between banks. But intraday markets never really took off until the 2010s, when the regulatory focus on intraday liquidity increased, BCBS 248 came out, all of that. And that's when we started Fintium in 2018, was to create intraday markets, like intraday trades. And actually, Nick Appleby, who's now at Planix, was part of one of the early roundtables that we had with UK Finance around 2018. But what is an intraday trade? So for an intraday trade, intraday transaction is when the first leg of the trade and the second leg of the trade both have a defined time, and those times are on the same value date. So for example, UBS borrowing 500 million euro from NatWest from 7th of March at 10 a.m. until the 7th of March at 4 p.m. So it's quite new because like banks are used to having value dates, and they're used to something happening in like sometime during that value date, and measuring like what time did things happen, like what time did we do the first leg of that overnight repo. But they're not used to having a value date time, you know, like I said, 10 until 4.
Got it. So the way when I first heard about what you did, I thought about in my own personal bank account, I'm a bit short during the day. I don't want to incur any interest charges or call from the bank. So I'd lend money from someone, but I'd hand it back before the end of the day. Is that the equivalent in my own world?
Yep, that would be equivalent.
Got it. Okay, so how do these transactions work? What are the mechanics behind how they work from a Fintian point of view?
Yeah, I'll talk specifically about Fintium transactions. So I mentioned UBS and NatWest that are going live soon with intraday FX swaps, and we also do intraday repo, and so that'll be going live later this year. And there are other banks, of course, but UBS and NatWest are the two that we're able to name. And a lot of people are interested, like, what does our platform do? So our platform is like the pre-trade, and banks can send each other RFQ, or they can trade through a central limit order book and agree the terms of an intraday FX swap or intraday repo with each other. And one of the first questions though was like, how does it settle? So specifically with intraday FX swaps, for the initial phase, what UBS, NatWest, and the other banks are going to do is just send each other money in normal real-time gross settlement systems. So in Target2 or CHAPS or Fedwire, because we focus on euro, sterling, and dollars for now. So that's how the trade settles. Sorry, it might also be worth mentioning, how does a bank arrive at the conclusion that they need to do an intraday trade? Like, so I gave an example earlier of UBS borrowing 500 million euro from NatWest. How would they figure out that they need 500 million euro on T plus one from 10 a.m. until 4, for example? And what would they do about it? So in our world, they could look at systems like Planix's system Reality to figure out what their expected intraday patterns are, or know in real time what their intraday patterns are. And in the Fintu platform, there are different user roles. There's a user role that can communicate to the front office, we need an additional 500 million euro, and then the front office can execute that in the market. So that's roughly how it works.
Got it. And in terms of how these transactions settle, how do you know if it has or it hasn't happened? So I can imagine you're relying on banks to tell you, or how do you get that certainty in terms of is it's happened or not?
So you can figure out, like I said, initially banks are settling these trades in the real-time gross settlement systems. In future, it might settle in other payment systems, like the Finality payment system or RTGS Global, or HQLAX for intraday repo trades or something. But today, for intraday FX swaps, they'll be able to monitor it through SWIFT messaging, MT900s and MT910s. They'll be able to pick up the trade and see that we sent the money at, if we agreed to trade from 10 until 10:30, we sent the money at 10:05, we received the money at 10:07. So it's initially those intraday FX swaps are not PVP settled, but we have a rule book that says it must happen within a defined time window. For intraday FX swaps, it's 30 minutes. So both receiving the euro, sending the dollars has to happen between 10 and then 10:30. Otherwise, there are late fees according to our rule books. It's like our rule book. So it's kind of a form of settlement discipline that didn't exist before. But yeah, that's how it works.
I've got it. And we had on the last call, we had podcast, we had RTS, RTGS Global on that. And we talked about Finality in the past, and we're talking to you now. Do you think interoperability between these platforms is important, critical? Is it for the future or for now? What's your view on how these systems need to talk to each other?
Yeah, I get asked that question a good bit. Interoperability is a big buzzword. So on our side, we have built using a technology called Corda, and people ask us, how do we get interoperability between our technology and, for example, the Finality payment system, which is built using Hyperledger Bazu? So can we get interoperability between those two protocols?
Got it.
And we did a test trade back in 2022 with Finality in the Finality payment testnet. And we were able to communicate instructions, settle it, and then receive proof, I guess, that it's settled. So on our side, we're not concerned about interoperability between our system and any other system. So we are convinced that we'll be able to interoperate with any payment or settlement system, whatever protocol it's built on. And then your question was also like, is RTGS going to be interoperable, RTGS Global, for example, going to be interoperability with Finality or with other new payment systems that are out there? And I know that there are initiatives underway in the industry which look very promising, which will mean that you'll be able to have atomicity between, you know, a payment on one system and a payment on another system. So again, I'm not overly concerned about that. I think there are great technical minds in the industry that are working on that, that are going to have good solutions for it.
Good, good. And I'm thinking when you talked about liquidity visibility, but you know, during the day, having real-time access to not only your liquidity needs now, but the forecast as well, that's going to be critical. So you know what you need now, not what you think you may need tomorrow. It's what you need now, and then the forecast forward, so you know where it will end, so you can make the right level of trade at the right time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the better real-time insight you have into your overall liquidity, the better you'll be able to engage in intraday markets and intraday transactions. So you know, we talked with a bank once before that said they have a good understanding of their historical patterns. They'll be able to, you know, they know from their recurring patterns that it would be beneficial for the bank to buy, I'll just make up some numbers, like 200 million euros sterling every day from 10 until 2, because you know we're always short of euro and we're always long of sterling in those areas, for example. But they would only be comfortable, again making up numbers, they would only be comfortable doing 120 million because they don't have real-time insight, whereas if they had real-time insight, they'd feel more comfortable doing the full 200 or 250. So they'd be able to get a much better business case if they had real-time insight.
Okay, got it. So, look, if we take a step back, clearly intraday settlement has been around for quite a few years, and I think it's more well understood with BCBS 248. But why now in terms of what the offering that you're providing? So it's relevant, probably as relevant in 2010 as it is now, but what's made this more relevant now, and why is it more easy to convince banks that this is the right way to head?
Yeah, I think there's a number of factors that has meant that the whole industry is more focused on intraday transactions now than they were a number of years ago. So, well, 2010, BCBS 248 wasn't out yet. And I think the regulatory focus since 2013, 2014 has just steadily increased year on year. The regulatory focus on intraday liquidity and having the right tools and capabilities to manage intraday liquidity. I think also in the last couple of years, because of it rising interest rates, the cost of holding US treasuries or bonds or you know, other forms of HQLA on the balance sheet, just so that you'll always have enough for your intraday needs. The cost of holding that HQLA has increased a lot. So there's a much better business case than there was a couple of years ago to be able to optimize how much HQLA we hold by having access to better tools, right? So if we're able to actively manage our intraday liquidity, we need to hold less HQLA. So on our side, we used to talk about a business case of 12 million a year. Now at the current level of interest rates, which are likely to stay roughly where they are, it looks like it's now more like 20 million a year that a bank can save. So the business case has improved a lot in the last couple of years. And the industry, there's been several initiatives. It's not just us. There are initiatives on intraday repo as well, particularly for US dollars away from us, which means that everybody is now getting more up to speed, more knowledgeable about intraday transactions and how it can benefit the bank. And I guess the other big picture is that data is more readily available and is in focus a lot more than it was before. So people are much more aware now of what their intraday patterns are and how much it costs the bank because they have more data available to them.
Got it. And just in the way you talk through that, do you think there needs to be a set number of banks or firms? Obviously, there's at least two that you need, but do you think there's a minimum set or that actually makes this work? Obviously, you would like every bank, but is there a minimum set that you think makes this a viable proposition?
Yes, in a way. Like you said, if you only have two banks, it's not a real market, but you can have two banks that have the complete opposite position to each other. One would really like some additional euro every day from 10 until 2, and the other would really like some additional sterling. So, you can create a solution that works for those two banks with only two. We've done matching exercises where it was only three or four banks in the exercise to determine, do they have opposing positions? And they did, mostly. More than 50%. So the more participants there are in these markets, the more valuable it will be for everybody, and also the bid ask spreads are going to tighten. But even with a small number of players, it can create a lot of value for those people.
No, sure. And just some comments on DLT. I know you use that. What's the value of that, and explain how that works or why that's an important underpinning of your proposition?
It creates benefits that we wouldn't be able to provide to our clients if we didn't utilize DLT. And we're constrained on time in this podcast. I could talk about this for longer, but I'll stick to a simple example, which is that when two banks agree, let's say an overnight FX swap on one of the legacy platforms, they need to send each other MT300 confirmation messages. So that slows things down, right? Because they agree a trade. They might have to check for credit after agreeing the trade. Some other platforms have a soft match where you have to check for it, but we have a hard match. So as soon as the trade is agreed, it's done, basically. And then after they've agreed the trade, check for credit, they have to send each other an MT300 to say, this is my understanding of the trade that we just agreed. They receive back an MT300 and they reconcile them. And if there are breaks, they need to be resolved. In our case, because we utilize DLT, the banks don't need to exchange MT300s because the DLT can serve, because you have a shared data record of the trade, both parties signed that trade, and that serves as a confirmation from an ISDA master agreement perspective. So that's the simplest example I can give about why DLT.
No, got it. It sounds like there's probably a certain decent amount of legal preparation work to onboard a bank. Is that fair? Getting all the agreements in place and the rules?
It's not that extensive.
Not overly onerous.
For a bank to join our platform, it's less work, or the same, I would say, or less work compared with joining any other trading or execution venue from a legal perspective. I would say it's even less because in our case, we have a rule book. As soon as they subscribe to a rule book, that automatically amends the ISDA master agreement with the counterparty. So they don't even have to do any ISDA work. So no, thankfully the legal work is not too heavy.
Understand. Okay. So you're sat in front of a bank and you're talking about value benefits. I heard you mention 20 million a year. What's the, three or four things that you would say to a potential new bank in terms of the value this would provide to them?
There's the main business case, which is being able to reduce the amount of high quality liquid assets, HQLA, that they need to hold. So that one is 20 million a year. For some banks, they might be leverage ratio constrained. And so by reducing the amount of HQLA they need to hold, they might free up some capital or some LRD that they can deploy elsewhere. So there's a potential opportunity cost sort of business case for banks that are LRD constrained. There is also a business case for banks that can, you know, lend money on an intraday basis. So like I said, if a bank found that when they looked at their historical intraday liquidity patterns, which they can do in Planex's reality, and they might find, you know, every day we could lend out 200 million euro between 11 and 3, well, that's actually a potential revenue source, where at the moment bank is not earning anything by having that additional money in their nostro, having that additional money in their central bank account, because they only earn interest on what's there at the end of the day. So we normally say there's 1 to 3 million of revenue that a bank could generate just by utilizing excess intraday liquidity that they have. And there are other harder to quantify benefits of being able to mobilize your collateral more quickly, either with your cash or your securities, being able to explain to your regulator that you're very much in control of your intraday liquidity.
Absolutely.
Or being able to explain that to your second line of defense, your liquidity risk team, that you're so well in control of your intraday liquidity that you can actually execute transactions in the market. Those are harder to quantify, but also valuable benefits for your bank.
Got it. So, Brian, we've got a question here from Abhinav Goel. Hope you've gotten your name right. How do you ensure certainty of fur leg trade?
I'm going to interpret it as how do you ensure that the trade
far leg, sorry.
Oh, the far leg.
Far leg, yeah. It did say fur leg, but it's far leg.
Certainty of the far leg. So taking the example I had before, 500 million trade from 10 until 4, our rule book says you have between 4 and 4.30 to settle that far leg it's an FX swap. Also, same for an intraday repo. You have a defined time where you can settle the off leg of an intraday repo between 4 and 4.30 in BNY Mellon Tri-Party or however you're settling that intraday repo. But in the case of an FX swap, the rule book ensures that it settles at that time. If for some reason, let's say your counterparty's payment system is down or your counterparty's nostro is down, if they don't settle that far leg before end of the day, like before target two closes, before CHAPS closes, then the normal money market process would apply for them to compensate you if you have a smaller balance than normal. Plus the Fintium rulebook would compensate you for with late fees. For the fact that you didn't receive the cash that you expected at the time when you expected it. So that's what we've done.
Understand. Okay. So picking up on the benefits, do you see this tool being used or helped when it comes to the like of the move to T+1, the increase in instant payments and the volumes being sent through those platforms?
Yes, definitely. The move of US Treasury settlement from T+2 to T+1 means that banks and other organizations have additional funding needs which are more timely and more difficult than to fund. So having access to these markets is definitely beneficial. And some people have told us this 30-minute window, being able to execute a trade and have certainty that it's going to settle but at that exact time, that could be very beneficial as a result of the funding requirements that come out of the move to T+1 in the US. Instant payments as well. We've heard this over the years, I would say, because we've been at this since 2018. So some people have said more and more payments are going to move to instant, faster payments, for example, in the UK. And that means that banks need to be able to react. So if you have an additional funding need as a result of large corporate payments going through on faster payments instead of CHAPS, and you need to have markets where you can quickly source funding to be able to resource those needs. So yes, it definitely helps with that as well.
Got it. So in terms of solutions we have at Planix, we have something called payment control, which is essentially throttling to try and even out that spread over the day. So is, you know, intraday transactions, is that an alternative, or is that, can they coexist? I presume they can coexist, but interesting to hear your view on that.
Yeah, I see them as alternatives, and I definitely think that they can coexist. There was a bank a few years ago that said, you know, if there was very liquid intraday markets, then we wouldn't need to withhold outgoing payments. If we just needed additional liquidity, we could buy it in the market. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think there will always be banks that withhold a certain portion of outgoing payments for different reasons, so throttling or payment control. I think that the two will coexist and they complement each other very well. But there are benefits that you get from buying a currency intraday that you don't get with payment control, because you can still pay your clients on time, your counterparties, and all those things. You don't have to, you know, have the treasurer of Coca-Cola calling you up saying, I used to make my outgoing payments at 3 and now it's not until 5 or whatever. So you can keep your clients happy by buying money intraday in the interbank market and then continuing to make payments on time. And that's something we can potentially face issues with if you're throttling payments.
Got it. And so, well, I can see the importance here of real time, you know, 24/7. Is there any technology challenges you see in this in terms of performance, scale, operability globally on this, or is that under control?
Seems to be under control based on everything we've great seen answer. So far. Operating a system 24/7 is definitely challenging, but I don't think intraday markets are going to go 24/7 in the next couple of years. Like, our markets are open 12 hours a day, and hopefully soon it'll be 24/5. But we need appropriate settlement mechanisms to be able to do 24/5. And I think it'll take time before banks want to be executing these sorts of funding transactions on the weekend. So I think 24/7 is probably more than a few years away.
Got it. And probably final question for me, but just around Fintium, what the future holds, and is this a market you have to win in, or can many Fintium-like products coexist? I asked the same question to RTGS Global last week, and the answer was many can exist, so we can all exist and be happy collaborating. But is this something that you have to win, or, you know, there can be other parties out there that do similar things?
There will definitely be other platforms that do similar things. Like, it's the same for overnight FX swaps and overnight repo. You know, there are different platforms where banks can execute their overnight trades. There are a few platforms, and that'll probably be how it works in intraday as well. There'll be two or three platforms where market liquidity coalesces. And we're doing everything we can to make sure that we're one of those two or three.
Those winners. Perfect. One last question has come through from Hugo Lagrotta. If the number of banks joining the platform increases, would you allow for multilateral nettings?
Short answer is, I've been told that multilateral netting is very difficult to do legally. You know, we're always looking at solutions that are demanded by our clients. So, if you take, for example, like, if there are a lot of trades happening that have a far leg at 4 p.m. and banks are looking to do bilateral netting at the counterparty pair level, that's relatively easy to do. If banks wanted to do multilateral netting, I've been told that legally it's very, very difficult. But we would do our best to make sure that we keep our clients happy.
No, so is it a technical challenge as well, or mainly a legal one?
Mainly legal, I'm told.
a legal one, the hardest of all, right? Look, Brian, great talking to you today. Thanks for joining, sharing your views. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. Any questions that get asked, send them through. We can respond later. That concludes our latest Liquidity Live Stream podcast. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much for joining today. Great topic. Look out for our next podcast that will be in early April. My name's Neville Roberts. Thank you very much for tuning in. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.